We're going to learn Daf Lamed Tes and Masechtas Ksubas. We're going to back up just a drop and learn the last few lines on Daf Lamed Ches Amud Beis. And we'll start as follows. We'll start from about five lines from the bottom. Amar Rabbaya, Baleo Meisa Potter. We're talking about over here the case of Einus Umafata, and we know the halacha is basically that there is a din that the Baal has to pay 50 shekel, and we're going to get into that a little bit later today, but for now, he has to pay 50 shekel for the act of the Einus Umafata. But that is only true, of course, as we know. It only applies while the girl is a Naira. So what happened over here is, what if she dies before they have the opportunity to take the boil to Bezdin and to collect? So Amar Abaye Bala El Mesa Potter. If there was the act was done at the right time, but then she died before the father had an opportunity to bring him to Bezdin. So according to Abaya, Potter, he's off the hook. He doesn't have to pay. Shenemar, because the pasuk says, "V'nosan la'avi hanayro," that he has to pay to the father of the young girl. V'loy la'avi mesa, but it's not to the father if she's already dead. So there's only a chiv to pay while she's around as a girl. If she's dead, then there is no chiv, and the father does not have a right to collect. That is Abaya's statement. Then Milsa de Pshita Leila Abaya, but this concept, which was very clear to Abaya that there's no obligation if she already died, this was simple to Abaya. Mibaya Leila Rava, this same exact idea was a question. Rava was unsure what the halacha would be in that context. Abaya Rava, because Rava himself asked, Yesh Bagar Bekever, Ain Bagar Bekever. So the way Rashi learns Rava, the question is like this: if she died, and she would have become a beger. So let's say in a month from now, she would have, if she had been alive, she would have stayed, a month later she would have turned into a begeris, and then it would have been too late. At that point the father would no longer have the rights to collect. If he still hadn't brought the boil to Bezdin at that point, and she now, as a 12.5-year-old, is in her, as a beger, she's in her own jurisdiction, she has her own powers, so therefore she would be able to collect herself. So the question is, do we look at that time, a month later, even though she had already died, do we say that a month later she still ages into the level of Bagrus, and now the father no longer has rights? And the Gemara explains, Yesh Bagar Bekever Vid Benohave, if she would become a Bagaris even after she died, the timing would go into, the clock would still go, and she'd become a Bagaris a month later in this example. So therefore, the money that needs to be collected really belongs to her, and if she has a son, that, or a Yorish, it would go to her. Or maybe there is no such thing as becoming a Bagaris after she already dead. The clock stops at that moment, and she remains a Naira forever, and therefore her father is the one who is singly allowed to collect the knas that the boil owes. That's the way Rava phrases the question. Again, to Abaya, this was obvious that she certainly becomes a begaris, and therefore the father loses all his rights. And once he loses his rights, he can't collect anymore. But Rava says no. Maybe the father doesn't lose his rights at all because she remains a Naira forever, because she died while she's a Naira. Or, on the other hand, no, we say that the time would have, after that amount of time, she would have turned into a begaris. So therefore, the father does lose his rights, and if she has a Yairish, the Yairish gets to collect the knas. That takes us to the bottom of Lama Chesam Beis. Now, on the top of Lama Tesam Adalf, the first question the Gemara asks, Umima Abro, can she become pregnant? Because let's talk about the scenario over here. And the way the Meiri explains the Gemara, we're talking about the fact that there's knas, that means that she had to be a besula. That's part of the conditions where the Torah requires a knas. If she's not a besula anymore, there is no din of knas. Okay, so that means that the bia had to have happened while she was still a besula. Then, either from that act or from a subsequent act, she became pregnant, and then she had to have given birth, and then died. All of this happening before she's at the age of 12 and a half. Because, remember, if she was still alive when she was after 12 and a half, there was no question that for sure the money goes to her and not the father anymore. So in order for this to be a question, this all has to happen that she died under the age of 12 and a half. That means she had to have the baby also before the age of 12 and a half. So the question is, Umima Abra, can she possibly have become pregnant at that young age in such a short period of time? Vahatani, Rabibi Kameh Rav Nachman. Rabibi taught us the following. There are three types of girls that are permitted to use a moich, which is, again, as we described last time, is the idea of catching the zera so that she won't become pregnant. And there are three girls that, even though we know Ashchas Zera, generally speaking, is Aser, however, in this circumstance, it's going to be Mutter because of the dangers that are involved. Elohein, and here are the three girls that we're talking about. Katana, if she's under the age of, we'll see, under the age of 12. Umu Uberes, if she's already pregnant. Well, again, the Gemara will explain each one of these cases. Umenika, and if she's nursing at the moment, she doesn't want to become pregnant the second time. And here's the explanation. Katano, Shema Tisabro Vitamus. So Katano, because if she, we don't want her to become pregnant, because if she will become pregnant, let's learn the Gemara literally, Vitamus, and she will die. So obviously it's very dangerous for her to become pregnant, so we don't want an underage girl to become pregnant. Mu'uberes. If she's already pregnant, we don't want her becoming pregnant a second time. Shematasa uber ubra sandal. She might make the second pregnancy, the second baby, second fetus, would crush the first fetus and would disform the first fetus, either not to kill it altogether or just be totally deformed. But we don't want that to happen. Again, therefore, she would be allowed to make sure that she doesn't become pregnant the second time while she's already pregnant. And lastly, Manika, if she's nursing, Shema Tigma is Bana, she will stop being able to nurse her child, because we know the Metzius is that a pregnant woman is not able to nurse. She doesn't have the milk to be able to feed a baby. And in those days, especially when the only way they could feed the baby was through nursing, was if she becomes pregnant again and she no longer is able to nurse, her existing baby will not have any sustenance. So it's a sakana for the baby. So therefore she's allowed to make sure she does not become pregnant. But, okay, let's focus on our case. Our case is that she's an underage. The Ezehi Katana. So how do you define underage that we want to make sure she doesn't become pregnant? The Gemara, the Brisa explains, Mibas Achas Asrei Shono V'yoyim Echod Ad Shneim Asrei Shono V'yoyim Echod. From the age of 11 in a day to 12 in a day. So basically, an 11-year-old could theoretically become pregnant, but if she does, it would become very dangerous for her. Pochus Mikan V'yeser Alkei Mishah Mishas Kedark V'hoi Leches. Divir Rameir. And Rameir says, less than 11 years old and or above 12 years old, we don't care, then it's going to be fine. But think about it this way. Less than 11 years old, basically we're saying, Rabibi is saying that she's not going to become pregnant, so you don't have to worry about it. Over the age of 12 years old, it's not dangerous anymore, because now her body is able to take care of a baby. So therefore, we're talking about that she became pregnant, the time when she could not have become pregnant before the age of 12, because again, under 11, she can't become pregnant at all. Over 11, she'll use moich, so she'll make sure that it doesn't happen. So that's what we see from the Gemara over here. So we're talking about that she did not become pregnant, she's not going to allow herself to become pregnant under the age of 12. The only possibility is over the age of 12. We'll get back to that in a second. Let's just finish the sentence. Whether they're under 11 or 11 or in each one of these cases, she just does regular, she can do regular biva. The halacha of moich is not permitted. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take care of her, so we're not worried about the dangers. Mishum Shenemer, as the pasuk says, Shemer Pesayim Hashem. Hashem is going to guard and watch against those things that could happen. Okay, but focusing on Rav Meir Shita, Rav Meir says that she can't become pregnant before the age of 12. So the first possibility that she can become pregnant in the first place is at 12. Okay, so that would be our scenario. So our scenario would be that she had this bia, the onus umafata would have happened at 12 years old and a day. And then, let's say even from that, she became pregnant. So she only became pregnant over the age of 12. So now, and as we know, Bageris happens when she's 12 and a half. So let's say, okay, so she became pregnant while, when she was already a Naira, which means she's 12. And she would have given birth while she's still a Naira, meaning under the age of 12 and a half. So the Gemara says, one second, Bashita Yachi Miko Yaldo, how is it possible that she would be able to give birth after, in 6 months? But Omar Shmuel, Ein Ben Nairis the Bagris, Elashisha Chadoshim. The time difference between, for the age of a Naira is only from 12 to 12 and a half. Which means that this baby would have had to be born, remember, she only had to, the case has to be that she became pregnant after she was 12, and the baby is born before she's 12 and a half. So it's less than 6 months. So it's not possible, but Metzias. So maybe we just misunderstood what he's saying, is that Nairus has to last at least 6 months, but more than 6 months, it's possible, whatever the case would be, but it's possible for the Nairus to last for more than 6 months, and then it wouldn't be a problem, because once it's more than 6 months, she can certainly have become pregnant and given birth to a baby in the span of 6 months. That's not a problem. The problem is that that's not true. It says, the words El, that there's only 6 months between the age of 12 and 12 and a half. That's the maximum, not the minimum. And therefore, again, in order for this case to be true, that you have a Naira that already has a child, there's not enough time for her to have become pregnant and given birth while she's still a Naira. Okay, so the Gemara says that's not what Rava meant. That Rava never meant that the Yerusha is going to come, the Yerusha is going to go to her son. What Rava meant to ask is, same type of question, but it's just worded a little bit differently. Yesh bagar bekever upokaav. Do we say she becomes a bageris even after she died, like we said before? Let's say it was a month before she would have been 12 and a half. Now she turns 12 and a half a month later. Does that make her automatically a bageris because that time elapsed, and therefore the father loses his jurisdiction over her as a Naira, and he can no longer collect from the boil? And then if the father can't collect and she can't collect, there's nothing to talk about. Oidilma, remember, to Rava, this is a question. Oidilma, the other side of it is, Ein Bagar Bekever, that she does not become a Bageris after she died. She, so to speak, freezes at that stage, and that she remains a Naira forever. And therefore, the father's permission over her does not go away. And if it doesn't go away, then the father remains the father of a Naira, and he's able to collect. So remember, according to Abaya, it was Poshet that she's not considered a Naira anymore because she's Meso, and that's the end of the story. But according to Rava, at least, this is a question, and the only question is whether or not she turns into a Bageris eventually over the course of time. But the fact is that to the extent that she does not turn into a Bageris, even after she dies, the father, as long as she is a Naira, remains in, still has the same powers that he had over any girl that is a Naira. That is the way Rava phrases the question. A slightly different way is Mar Bar Avashi Boyelo. Mar Bar Avashi asks the question a little bit differently. He asks it as follows. Misa oisa bageres or ein oisa bageres. Does the mere fact that she died automatically trigger the halacha of her being a bageris or not? Meaning, if you think about it this way, logically, what's the difference between a naira and a bageris? It's, I guess, technically a physical type of difference, although we might not see it from one day to the next, but under the, a naira has certain characteristics and a bageris has certain characteristics. And that begins to change the moment she's at 12 and a half. Well, clearly, misa also is a very big change. So do we say that occurrence and that physical change of Misa automatically triggers the same halacha that a Bageris would have triggered in the girl? Again, very simple. If she's a Bageris, then the father no longer has power, has the rights to collect, and the boil, no one can take him to Besdin. Or do we say, no, she does not become a Bageris? And remember, it's frozen in time, and she is a Naira when she died, so she remains a Naira forever, and therefore the father remains the father of a Naira, and he would be able to collect on her behalf. To which the Gemara responds, Teku. So we don't answer the question. So again, the subtle difference between the way Rava asked the question and Mar Bar Avashi is, according to Rava, the question is, will the time elapse that she normally, if she was alive, therefore turn into a Naira? So do we say that happens eventually also, even after she died? That's one way to phrase it. And Marbar Ravashi says, no, does the death itself, does the act of dying, does the occurrence of the death make her automatically trigger the same halacha as a bageris and it stops immediately? Even if she wouldn't have been a bageris now for months. Doesn't matter. The fact that she died would, again, that's the question. Does that automatically make her into a bageris at the moment? That's the way the Gemara asks the question. So now Rava asks a different question from Abaya. So let's say the Onus HaMafata happens when she was just a regular Naira, and then she got Nisarsa, she got engaged, she got Kedushin. So the question really simply put is, does the Kedushin itself take her out of her father's jurisdiction, her father's power, and does that allow her to collect the knas now that she's already engaged? That's the simple question is. And the way Tosfos learns, he has a cheshbon that this is all going according to Rabbi Akiva of the Mishnah that says that after erusin, it would right. After erusin, the knas would go
to her.
Right, goes to herself. So the question over here is, does the erusin after, now here we're talking about a case where the bia certainly happened while she was a regular naira. It's just that before they had a chance to go to Bezdin, she got kedushin. So does that change where the money goes, who gets to collect the money? So Amar Lei, so Abaya answered him, Miksiv v'nosun la'avi ha'naira asher lo yaroso. Doesn't the pasuk say, the pasuk says that it goes to the father that isn't of the father of the girl who's not engaged. So obviously, if she's engaged, then it doesn't go to the father anymore. It should go to her. To which Rava responds, "Ula taimech, if you're using that logic, because the pasuk says that she's not engaged, Hatanya, Hadatanya, that which we learned, Baalev and Niseis laAtzma, says in the Brisa. There's a Brisa that says that if there was a bia again as a regular naira, and then she actually got married, not just engaged, she got married, so she gets to collect it. But the problem is, Miksiv and Osan Lavi Anaira Asher Loi Nesua. Does the pasuk say that it only goes to the father while she wasn't married? So you tell, and therefore that's why she gets it. It doesn't say that. And even so, we understand that even though the pasuk doesn't say it, the practical side of this is she's no longer in her father's house, so she's able to collect it. Hachiyashta. So now also, so over here also, even though it doesn't say that she's in her father's house or not in her father's house, this is really a question of, does the father have the right to collect this type of knas after she's engaged or not? So the Gemara says, "Oh, Yashda, how could you compare? Hosom ha'yelu begeres mitzia mirushosav." We know that the reality is that once a girl becomes a begeres 12 and a half, she's no longer in her father's rishos to collect any monetary collections. The nisuin mitzia mirushosav, and we also know that marriage also makes her no longer under the father's domain for monetary issues, and it doesn't go to her father. So we say like this. Ma bageres baleo bagro laatzma. Since we know the halacha is, the way to explain this like this, that just like a bageres, if there was a chiyuv knas, but she already turned into a bageres, she gets to collect it. Af nesuin baleo v'nisa laatzma. So too, by marriage, we understand that the reason why she gets to collect it is because she's no longer in her father's rishos, and she therefore just like bageres is enough to take her out of the father's rishos for collection purposes, so to the nesuin also is enough to take her out of the father's rishos for collection purposes. That all is very well by nesuin, because we know the halacha is that once she gets married, all her monetary collections go to the husband and not to the father anymore. So she's certainly on her own. Or if she's no longer married, especially even after her first, once she was married, even if she's no longer married, it doesn't go to the father anymore, it goes to her. The question was only, Ella Erisin, Mikam Mafkim Mirshusa da Avlagamri. Do we say that by Erisin, is that enough to take her completely out of the father's rishos, and therefore she would be able to collect on her own? And it would need to be that she's out completely, out of the father's rishos, in order for her to be able to collect herself, as opposed to the father being able to collect on her behalf. So therefore, the Gemara's response is, Hatanan, we have a Mishnah that says, Naira ha'amuraso, a girl, a Naira, who is currently engaged, and not married, avia ubalo mefir in law nidoreha. Both the father and her husband have to be mefir. If she makes a neder, she makes a promise, and we want to undo that promise, she needs to get afar, she needs to get the unwinding from both the father and the husband. So the way the Gemara, and the way the Rishonim understand what the Gemara is saying over here is that we see that she did not leave the father's Rishos. She is at least a little bit in her father's Rishos. And since she's still a little bit in the father's Rishos, and we know for other possible monetary collections, the father would still be able to collect what she receives because she is not yet married. So we see from the Nedarim, that's enough of a proof that, that's enough of a proof that she is still in his Rishos and the father still gets to collect. And that seems to be the conclusion of the Gemara. So in other words, the only time she leaves and she is in her own power or out of the father's Rishos is obviously if she gets married, because now she has a husband, and even if she is no longer with the husband, she's already out of the father's Rishos. That's after marriage. And also by Geras, like we discussed before, because now she's old enough, she aged out, that she's no longer under the father's Rishos. And if the father had not yet brought the boil to Beis Din to get the right to collect that money, and now she's a bayer, she can bring the person to Beis Din on her own and collect the knas on her own. That takes us to the end of this piece of the Gemara. Zok the next Mishnah. Hamefata noisein shloisha devarim. In the case of a mefata, so remember the difference between mefata and an oinis is that she, by mefata, the girl was involved willingly. By oinis, it was unwillingly. So we say mefata, so if it was willingly, nois and shloisha dvarim, the boil has to pay for three things. The oinis arba, and if it was against her will, there's a fourth thing that the boil has to pay, as the Mishnah itself explains. Ha mefata noisein boishes upagam the kanas. He has to pay for her embarrassment, for her pagam, what she went down in value, and he also has to pay the knas that the Torah described. Moisef alav oinis, and the oinis has to pay the fourth thing. What does he add on? Shenoisin es hatzar. He also has to pay for the tzar that was involved in the oinis. Ma bein oinis the mefata. Now the Mishnah is going to list some differences between oinis and mefata. Well, first of all, the obvious one that we just described. Oinis noisin es hatzar, mefata ein noisin es hatzar. So the first thing, even though again we just said this, but this is in the list of things that are different, is that the oinis has to, in addition to everything else, has to pay for the pain that it caused, whereas mefata doesn't have to pay for the pain. Here are some other differences. Oinis noisin miyad. The oinis has to pay for the knas and all the things that he has to pay for, he has to pay immediately. As we'll see, what this means is immediately is because he's going to have to marry her, and even if he marries her, or regardless of whether or not he marries her, but even if he marries her, he still has to pay these, the knas and all the other payments. However, v'amefata likashiyotzi, the mefata, so literally translated, he only has to pay the knas after he divorces her, after he gets rid of her. So we'll, again, the Gemara will describe, that means if he's not married to her, he has to pay. Ha'oines shoyse ba'atzitza. Another difference is that the oines has to drink from the kli that he created, meaning he has to marry this girl no matter what. Va'mefata imratza lahitzi moitzi. And the mefata, in the case of mefata, he doesn't necessarily have to marry her. It depends on whether it makes sense or not. So the Mishnah explains, keitzad shoyse ba'atzitza. What does that mean? He has to marry her no matter what. Afilo hi chigeres, even if she's limp, meaning she's missing an aver, missing a leg. Afilu hi suma, even if she's blind. Afilu hi mukashchin, even if she's a sickly girl who's falling apart. That's the girl that since he was ma'anis her, he must marry her no matter what. However, the exception to the rule is nimtza ba'davar ervo, he found that she did something, the arayas, that makes it usur for him to remain married to her. Oy she'ena ru'uya lovoy b'yisrael, or he's not allowed to marry her because she's, let's say, the simplest example is a mamzeres, she's somebody that is usur for him to marry. Ein rishay l'kai. So then he's not allowed to stay married to her. Shenemar, the loisia leisha. She has to be to him, or he has to be with her as a wife. Isha, haru'uya loy, and we darshan that it has to be a wife that would be appropriate for him. And appropriate over here means halachically appropriate. So if she's usur to him, then even though there's a din of oinus that he has to marry her, if she's not appropriate for him, then he's not allowed to be married to her, and the Isser Lav, or whatever the Isser might be, overrides the halacha that he'd have to marry her. Okay, that's the Mishnah, the essential difference. Okay, so we started with the Mishnah. The difference between Oinis and Mefata is that Oinis has to pay the additional tsar. So the Gemara wants to know. Yeah. Tsar demai. So now that we know there's a difference, there's something different about what the Oinis did that he has to pay for. He has to pay for the tsar. What tsar are we talking about is the difference. The Gemara's in the Havamina, the Gemara says, what pain exists that only exists in the context of an Oinis that doesn't exist in the context of a Mefata? And that would explain why he has to pay for it. He has to pay for it simply because this is where it exists. And therefore, but it doesn't exist by Mefata. That's why there's no chiv to pay for it, because it doesn't exist by Mefata. So let's see if we can find that case or not, or maybe there's a slightly different explanation. So tsar demai, Omar Avu de Shmuel. So Avu de Shmuel says, tsar shechofto al gabe karko. The tsar is the pain that he caused by pushing her down. In other words, it has nothing to do with the bia per se. It's a tsar that happens before the bia, that he pushed her down onto the ground. But the problem with that is, maskiflo of zero elamayato chofta al gabe shiroin. So what if he pushed her onto a silk bed where it's nice and soft, where she didn't hurt herself? The pushing didn't hurt. So hachanami the potter. So you're going to say that in that case, it's going to be potter. And that, in other words, that tsar is not an automatic tsar. It depends on the scenario. If he hurt her, he has to pay. If he didn't hurt her, he doesn't have to pay. V'chitei mahochanami. And if you want to say, yeah, that's what the Mishnah meant. It meant the kind of hurting that if it happened, yeah, if not, not. So, v'atani, we learned in a brisa. Now, this brisa, it gets a little confusing, is just trying to prove that this point, that the tsar we're discussing is the type of tsar which exists in every scenario. That's all the brisa, that for our purposes, what the brisa is trying to prove. But Tanya, we learned in a brisa, Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, Oimer, Mishim, Rabbi Shimon, it says the name of Shimon, Oinis, Ein, Mishalim, Es, Tzar, Mipnei, She, Soifa, now on the top of the Lama Tassim of Beis, She, Soifa, Li, Tzar, Tachas, Bailo. He says, no. The Oinis, he disagrees with our mission of the Halacha in total, and he holds that you don't have to pay tsar at all. Because this type of tsar, the way he understands what the tsar is a type of tsar that would occur anyway after she gets married. And if it's going to occur anyway, then why am I paying extra for it? What do I have to pay for that? It's something that's going to happen under the normal course of business anyway. So it's there's no reason why I have to make an extra payment for it. Okay, but we see that according to Rav Shimon ben Yehuda, that it's the type of tsar which happens in every scenario, because anyway it's going to happen after she's married. To which Amru Loi, the Chachamim, respond to him, Ein Adoim Nevelos Ba'Oinis LeNevelos Baratzon. And they say, no, this you can't compare the act of bia which happens against a girl's will versus something that happens with her consent. In any event, what we see from this brisa is that when we talk about tsar, we're talking about the type of tsar, the type of pain, which is always going to happen. It's going to happen in every scenario. It's even going to happen when she's married. Now, whether there's a difference between the marriage and not the marriage, that's what we're going to discuss. So we have to figure out what that tsar is. But you cannot give me a case and tell me that the tsar that I'm paying for is something which could or could not happen. It sometimes happens, depends on the scenario, if it depends on, you know. So Avu de Shmuel's idea of the tsar being unrelated to the bia, and it's just because he might have hurt her ahead of time, that's not what we're discussing. That's not what the Mishnah is discussing, because we see we were discussing a case that's going to happen in every scenario. Okay, so if it's going to happen in every scenario, what is that tsar that we're talking about that doesn't depend on the situation? El Omer of Nachman, Omer Rabba Bar Avua, in the name of Rabba Bar Avua, says, tsar shel pisa karaglayim. It's the pain that happens a moment in time before the bia, which is separating her legs. That pain that he does, that there is some pain involved in that, and therefore that's the pain which happens in every event, which in every occurrence of bia, that's the pain that you're going to pay for. V'cheinu oimer v'tifaski es ragleich l'chol oiver. So this is talking about when Klal Yisrael wasn't behaving, that they spread the legs so everybody could see. That shows that they were doing znos and whatever. That's what the Pasuk Yecheskel is talking about. But we see that there is this concept of pulling on the legs, that is, there's a pain there. And that's the pain that the oinis has to pay for. And that happens in every case. In every case of bia. So the Gemara asked the obvious question. Well, if you just said that that happens in every single scenario, so then why is there a difference between oinis and mafate? If we're talking about something that's during, so to speak, the normal course, so then it shouldn't be a difference between oinis and mafate. So Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rabba Baravua, Moshul the Mefata L'Ma'ad Avardoyma. He says, you're right. It does happen in every scenario. But so Rav Nachman wants to answer, the difference is that by Mefata you don't pay for a different reason. Because if you want, what does it compare to? La'odam sha'omer l'chaveira karo shiroi shali v'hi potter. Rip my shirt and you're going to be potter. Where I gave you permission to do the damage. I gave you permission to hurt me. So therefore, since I gave you permission, I can't then turn around and charge you for that pain because I gave you the permission to do it. So Enochanami, even though the pain or the damage exists, but since I gave you permission to do it, I cannot charge you. So the problem, the Gemara says, with this teretz is, this is a technical issue. Shali, how does she give permission and therefore as a result be moichel, the way Rashi learns? She's moichel the obligation to make the payment. She is not in the power to be moichel the money that doesn't belong to her, da'avu aninu, because this money really belongs to her father, not to her. And if it doesn't belong to her, she doesn't have the right to decide whether or not to give the guy permission to do something that would cause the father a loss, or the father is inability to collect money. So she does. If that's what we're talking about, because she gave permission and therefore it's a mechila, she doesn't have the right to be moichel the father's money. So finally, the Gemara says, "El Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Baravus." Rav Nachman says, "Okay, I'll give you a different shot." Pitcha shebehem oimrois mefuta ein lo tzar. He says, "No." Even though we're talking about a tzar, and even though the same scenario plays out in a mefuta, in a consenting scenario, in a consenting situation, however, they're able to say that that tzar is that would, if it's forced, it hurts. But if it's not forced and it's willingly, the way that most of Rishonim actually learned is that it's the hana of the bia overrides this tzar, so it's not a real tzar. So if there is no hana from the bia, then all they feel is the tzar, and therefore you can charge for the tzar. But if there's a benefit, if she gets the benefit of willingness of the bia is overrides any tzar, so therefore it's not a real tzar that you could monetize and charge money for. So therefore he says the pichlo, since they're doing it, they know how to do it in a way, it's not a real tzar to them. Again, the pain is there, but the pain is not something that they care about, because there's so to speak the pros outweigh the cons. It's the benefit outweighs the detriment. V'okachazina de'islay, but the Gemara says, what do you mean? L'maisa, we see that there is a little bit of tzar involved over here, so why shouldn't you charge? So Amar Abaya, so now the Gemara is going to explain, it's not really such a tzar, and again, if it's unwilling, then it's a tzar that I don't want to go through. But if it's something that I'm willing to go through, the tzar is not enough to really charge. If I'm willing, the benefit overrides. Amar Rabbi, Amar Li Aim. My mother explained, that doesn't really mean his mother, it means the woman who took care of him, because his mother died at birth, so it was really his caretaker. She told me, "Kemaya chamimi al reisha dekarcho." It's like hot water on the head of a bald person. So this is not really the way Rashi explains. It's not really a pain at all. It could be painful if you don't want the hot water to hit your head, but if you want the hot water to hit your head and you want to clean yourself, so then that doesn't really create a pain. So this is a good mashal, because the mashal is exactly that point. It's only a pain if you don't want it to be there, but if you want it to be there, then it's not considered it's not a pain at all. Rav Amar Li Bas Rav Chisda, the daughter of Rav Chisda, who happened to be his wife, told him, "Ki rivda de kasilta." It's like the kli, the vessel that they used to use to draw blood. So again, there's a poke over there. It's like, you know, if you ever gave blood, they poke you a little bit so that you give blood. So there's a little bit of a poke. So again, if you don't want that poke to happen, it's a nuisance and it hurts you. But if you don't mind, because it's part of whatever else is going on, so it doesn't really, you know, you don't focus on that little poke. You focus on the benefit that overrides it. So it's not considered a real tsar if she consents. Rav Papa Amar Amro Li Bas Ava Tsura, that Bas Ava Tsura, as Rashi says, was his daughter. His daughter explained to her, Ki Nahama Akoshi Bechinchi. It's like hard bread on the cheek. So again, it scratches, but the benefit of eating the, you don't really focus on the scratching of the bread if you're benefiting and you're eating the bread, because you're eating and you're having that hana. So once again, all these are different mashalim. There are different, I guess the reason why the Gemara brings all three is because they're probably different levels. Some are more painful than the other. But they all have the same result, which is that if you want the hana, either the hana overrides the pain, or when you want it, it's not even considered pain at all because that's part of the procedure. So the bottom line is, if it's willing, if it's done in the act willingly, so then this pain doesn't really amount to real pain. But at the same time, if it's done unwillingly, then the pain is just, the focus is just on the pain, and then the pain is enough to be monetized and be able to, and you can charge for that. And that's why only by oinis you're going to, there's a chiyuv to pay tzar and not by mefata. Okay. Now the Gemara continues. Ha'oinis noisin miyad, ha'mefata l'kishiyotzi. So we, as we said, when we were listing the differences between what they paid, we also listed the difference of when they paid. The oinis pays right away. Mefata l'kishiyotzi, again, the literal translation of yotzi is when he divorces her, when she leaves his rishus. So the Gemara says, l'kishiyotzi, when he leaves, ishtahi, she's his wife. How does she become his wife? When exactly did they get married? That we're talking about this, she's already a wife. So Amar Abaya, Emo, so you're right. What the Mishnah means to say with these words are, l'kishalo yikones, when he doesn't marry her. So he has the option to marry her. If he marries her, Enochanami, he doesn't have to pay anything now. But if he decides not to marry her, then Enochanami, he has to pay the knas now. As opposed to the oinis, doesn't have that choice. The oinis is going to marry her, and even so, he still has to pay right away. Tanya Nami Hochi, we have a brisa that says like this, Avabisha Omra Mafata Noisin Likashaloyi Kones, here very clearly it says when he does marry her, that the Mafata pays only if he decides not to marry her. Baishusubagam, that's by the Knas. Baishusubagam, Noisin Miyad, but the Baishusubagam, that you have to pay right away, because that you're paying for damages that for now, so you have to pay that. The Knas depends on whether they get married. The Echad Oinis Vechad Mafata, then the brisa continues and says whether it happened Oinis or Mafata, Ben He Uben Avia, Yecholin la'akev. They're each, both she and her father are each able to decide not to go through with the marriage, even by an oinus. So the Gemara says, well, let's see. Bishlam mefuta. I understand in the case of mefuta that they could decide not to ksiv imoyin yimoyin aviha. That if the father refuses, okay, it's very clear in the pasuk that the father can refuse to give her over as a wife to this guy. Elielo avia, so we know that it applies to the father. He asked him, how do we know that she also, even though she's a little girl, she has a say in the matter to say, I don't want to marry this guy. Talmud loimer, it's a special gezeirus hakasuv here, even though the father had the right to marry her, but in this scenario, she has a right to say, I don't want to get married. Talmud loimer, that's why the pasuk says, yimo'ein, that she can refuse mikol mokum in every scenario. Meaning that even though normally this is something that only the father gets to decide, because we know that a girl under the age of 12 and a half, the father has the right to, the father could decide to be mekabel kedushin for her. But in this case, because of the mefata, she's able to refuse also. Fine. That makes sense in the context of mefuta, because there's a pasuk. Ela oines, but in the case of oines, bishlam ihi, so I understand that she can say no, ksiv veloisia, that he will be to her she will be to him as a wife. So we say, tia, from the word tia, that she will be, midaito, that gives her an opinion in the matter, so it has to be with her will. If she doesn't want to get married to this guy, she has a right to say no. I get it. Ela avia minolon. But where do we see that the father has a right, in the case of oinis, to say, I don't want you taking her as a wife? There's no pasuk for that. Amar Abaya. So Abaya's explanation is Shaloye Choyte Nischa. The reason why the father can refuse is because the father can look at the situation over here and say, the only reason why you're ma'anis her is because you want to force her into marriage. I am not going to allow you, as a Choyte, you did the Avera and then you benefit that I can't stop you. Why should I lose out? Again, remember, because the father otherwise would have the right to be Mekadosh her. So why would the father, or even if over 12 years old he can't, but the father certainly would get the money from it. So why would the father lose out just because this guy decided he can't take control? Is a chaytanisker. He'd be doing the Avera, and he's still able to benefit from it. So therefore, we say that's why the father is able to stop her. to stop the marriage. That's Abaye's pshat. Rova Omar, Rova says no. Kabachomer, it makes sense that the father is able to interfere and stop the marriage because Uma Mefata Shaloi Ovar Ella Aldasa Viha Bilvad. In the case of Mefata, where the only one who was slighted was really the father, because remember she already agreed. In the situation of Mefata, that's the whole idea. That's why it is Mefata, that she consented to the original bia. And even so, the halacha is Ben Hiu Ben Avi Yechon La'akev. When it comes to the marriage part of it, both he and the father are able to say no, thank you. Even though, remember, and only in that case, only the father was able to refuse. She was able to refuse also. Oynis she'over al dasa v'yave al dasa atzmo. But in the case of Oynis, where it was against everybody's will, like Kol Shegein, so certainly, and she's able to say no. Certainly, the father is able to say no. Okay, so Rava learns it as a kal v'chomer that where mafata everybody could say no, then by Oynis certainly everybody can say no. Okay. Now, Rava lo yomer ka Abaye. Why doesn't Rava agree to Abaye's? Abaye's pshat is very simple. The guy's going to force her and then force her to get married. So he doesn't want to say that. Why? Kiven de ka mishalim knas lav choyteniskahu. It's not really a force because he's going to have to pay for that right. He's going to have to pay the knas. So once he pays for the knas, so even whether or not they get married, he's already paying for what he did. So he's not really, getting a freebie out of this. So therefore, Rava says that's not enough of a reason to say that the father's able to refuse. Okay. Abaye lo yomer k'Rava, and why doesn't Abaye agree to Rava's pshat that it's a kal v'chomer? He says, I'll tell you why. Mefata di ihu motzi ma'akev. In Mefata also, the halacha is that the guy himself is able to say, I don't want to get married. Of course, if he says, I don't want to get married, he's going to have to pay the knas. But even the boyel has the right to say, I don't want to. So therefore, avianami motzi ma'akev. So therefore, once the boyel can say no, the father also can say no. Essentially, everybody has a right to say no. Oynis, whereas in Oynis, the Ihu loy motzi ma'akev, where the boyel does not have a say in the matter whatsoever to decide whether or not he's going to be married, avianami loy motzi ma'akev. So therefore, even though there's a kal v'chomer, but there's a logic against the kal v'chomer that says it's not up for decision, it's not up for it's people's choice whether or not they want to get married. She, okay, it involves her, so she's able to say no. But if the husband can't say no, then the father can't say no either. Okay, so that's the bottom line is lahalocha. Everybody agrees that both in the case of Oynis and Mefata, everybody agrees that in both scenarios, both the father and the daughter are able to say no. The only question is the machlekes Abaye and Rava is why. According to Abaye, it's because of choyten iskar. We don't want this guy being able to force his way into a marriage. And Rava says it's a kal v'chomer by Mefata. The Torah allowed it, so then Kol Shekein, the Torah is going to allow it by Oynis also. Okay, next point. Tanya Iduch, we have another braiso. Ava bisha amru oynes noisen miyad. Oh, so we said that by an oynes, he has to pay the knas right away, even though he marries her. Kishe yoytzi hu ein lo alav klum. So it says, but if he ever divorces her, he doesn't have to pay anymore. Basically, what we're saying is that knas was the payment of her ksuba, and he has to pay that amount up front. So if he has to pay right away, and he has to marry her, and if there's ever a divorce, he won't have to pay anything because he already paid the knas. But the problem is, the Gemara says, because she yoytzi mimotzi mafik lo. What do you mean when he divorces her? He's not allowed to divorce her. That's the point. The point is that he has to marry her, and she has to remain his wife forever. So the Gemara answers, emo kisha teitze hi, when she goes out. Meaning, there is a scenario where the marriage is so miserable, where she doesn't want to be, she wants a divorce. So then the halacha is that if she wants the divorce, the husband is allowed to marry her. Meaning, he can't make the decision to get a divorce. He's forced, his right to decide was taken away from him. But if she wants the divorce, then he's allowed to divorce her because she wants it. So then, ain a love klum. That's the case where the point is that he already paid for the ksuba, so he doesn't have to pay the ksuba again when he divorces her. And similarly, mace yaitz a kesef knasa b'ksubasa. Also, the same thing is true. We know that the scenario for ksuba is both in the case of divorce and death. And also, if he dies, Once again, the amount that he paid for the knas was already covered the ksuba. He's not going to have to pay the ksuba again. That is the Tanakama Shita. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, Imer Yesh Lo Ksuba Mana. He says no. He disagrees with the whole concept. Even though there's a knas, there's still a concept of a ksuba. However, the ksuba will only be a mana because, of course, at that point, by the time they're getting married, she's no longer a basula, so it'll only be the mana. It'll only be 100. But the point is, there still has to be, the concept of ksuba still has to be in place. So what are they arguing about, whether or not the knas covers the ksuba or not? Rabbanon savri, time of my tikinu rabbanon ksuba. Why is it that there is a concept that the rabbanon decided that we need a ksuba in place? Kidei shaloi tehe kalo be'enav lohitziya. Because we want to make it difficult for the husband to divorce her. We want to make him think about it for a second before he just says, not interested, let's get divorced. But if there's a payment involved, now the husband's going to think about it for a second. It'll help keep the marriage. So that's why there's a ksuba, to make sure that he doesn't divorce her. And over here, again, since we learned the halacha is the Torah requires that they stay married and he's not allowed to divorce her, so then we don't have to protect from that scenario. We don't have to protect from that because he's not allowed to divorce her anyway. So we don't have to worry about him thinking, does the ksuba make a difference or not? Fine. However, Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda Savar, so why is Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda say that we're going to insist on a ksuba here anyway, even though he never could divorce her, he's not allowed to divorce her? Savar, he holds, ha nami matzar lo ad amra hi loy be'inoloch. Because he can make it so difficult for her and so painful for her until she's the one who says, yeah, I want to get a divorce. Because remember, we learned the halacha is that the husband can't be the one that making the decision to get the divorce. But she does have that right at all times to decide that she doesn't want to stay married. So since she's the one who's able to make that decision, what he'll do is he'll just make it so difficult for her to want to stay married, so then it looks like it's her decision, but realistically it's his decision. So we don't want him to push her in that direction, there is a scenario where if there was a ksuba involved, he may actually decide not to create the scenario that they'll get a divorce. So you're right, it looks like it's her decision, but he's the one who's pushing it. So that's why we have to have a ksuba over here to make sure that he's not putting, turning the wheels behind the scenes to make their divorce. So that's why we insist that there's still a ksuba. Okay, we'll finish off with these last lines. Einus shoyse batzitzah. So one of the other things that the Mishnah said was that if there's an einus, he has to marry her no matter what, even if she is not the type of girl that he would want to marry. Again, not halachically an issue, but he's not the type of girl. Like, as the Mishnah says, she's missing a limb, she's blind, and so forth. Amar Rava mi par zakia li Rav Ashi. So Rava said to Rav Ashi, michti, migmar gemiri mehadodi. So the truth of the matter is that einus and mefata, we do have gzeira shava that we learned already that they're together. The whole idea, for example, that we pay 50 shekel is because it says 50 in the context of einus, and it says shekel in the context of mefata, and we put the two together. So we see these two halachas, even though they're different psukim, they do get joined together. So now, just the one line on the top of Mem Amud Aleph. So the Gemara says, "L'ha milsa nami ligmur me'adali." So why don't we say this halacha, that since we know it's beferish in the pasuk that an einus has to marry her, why don't we say that also should be linked as if it happened in the as if it's written in the parasha of mefata, that a mefata also should have to marry her? Why don't we put those two cases together? So to which the Gemara answers, Omar Kro, no, because there is a separate pasuk, Maher Yimaren Eloi Leisha, and we darshan Loi Midaitoi. Because the only things that we put together are things that are missing from one parsha to the other parsha. So we put the two parshios together and we say, okay, this piece of information is missing from one, we'll pull it from the other. But if the parsha itself addresses the issue, then it's not missing. And it's not missing, and then whatever the Torah says, the Beferish in that parsha, that's what is going to be the rule. So in the parsha of Mefuta, it says, Maher Yemaren Eloi, that he has to create a contract for her. So since it says Loi for her, Yemarena for her, so Leisha Loi Midaitoi, Loi for him rather, so Leisha Loi Midaitoi, so we darshan that it's Midaitoi, that since it's something that he has to to create for her, and he has to create it. So if he decides that he doesn't want to create this, he doesn't want to get this marriage, the Torah itself, it's in the case of Mefata, in the parsha of Mefata, is giving him this right. So yes, it's true, by Oinus it says something else, but we can't pull that halacha from Oinus, because Mefata has its own rules. It has its own explicit rules, and the rule is that he could decide whether or not he's going to get married. So that's why we don't learn the Gezeira Shava applies to this, whether or not they get married, and that will be one of the differences between Oinus and Mefata. Okay, we'll stop over here.